Hi, everybody. It's Dr. Eric Quorum, founder of AIM7. Welcome back to The Blueprint, where we distill cutting-edge science, leadership, and life skills into simple tactics optimized for your busy lifestyle and goals. Today, I'm back with Dr. Todd Kashtan to discuss the art and science of crafting messages that change minds. Basically, how to persuade people even when you lack formal authority. Dr. Kashtan is a world-renowned professor of psychology at George Mason University and a leading expert on persuasion and influence. If you missed episode 445 on principled insubordination, you'll definitely want to go listen to that after this episode. In today's episode, Dr. Kashtan shares evidence-based strategies for creating compelling arguments, framing ideas in terms of aspirational visions, and finding the right messenger to amplify your impact. Whether you're an innovator challenging the status quo in sports science like I was, or a leader seeking to drive change in your organization, you'll walk away with a toolkit for communicating your ideas with clarity and impact. But before we get started, make sure to hit that subscribe button on whichever listening platform you are joining us from so that you never miss another episode. All right, let's dig right in. Let's lean in and learn from the best. How can we craft messages that are more likely to change people's minds? So we have something that needs to change in the culture, or something that needs to change in our organization. How can we create the right message, especially if we're kind of lower on the totem pole? We've done all the things you just said before. We showed up. We were that person that put in the hard work. We've been a consistent employer, a teammate, but maybe you don't have the gravitas of being a VP or a senior member on the team.
So I'm glad you asked this. So this is all based on psychological science. One of the important things that it's more compelling to have a message that's crafted towards, has an aspirational vision. It's positively valence. It's framing what we can do versus what we can't do, what we shouldn't do. So we want it to be approach oriented as opposed to avoidance oriented. So I'll give you a concrete example. If I was in the military, and you might remember in the beginning of COVID, there was the USS Teddy Roosevelt. There was a huge COVID outbreak. And basically the leading commander on that ship said, we are not going to dock. We have a mission. We're going to stick with it. And there was a mutiny. There was principled insubordination saying there are people that are really sick. We don't know what this COVID thing is that's going on, but there's an outbreak. And there was basically a number of people saying, we're not going to work anymore until we dock. In this case, you can frame the message to the commander and basically whoever is guiding the ship, the captain of that ship, in terms of, we have to protect the health and welfare of these veterans that are part of our team. That's approach oriented, or we should not be listening to command when they tell us a message that's basically against what we care about, which is the health and welfare of this team. One is saying we have to disagree with someone when they do something that's wrong. The other one is, I will do everything to protect the life and health of the people that are beside me in the military. Approach-oriented messages are much more effective than avoidance-oriented messages.
Man, I wish I knew this stuff when I was in sports. I probably would have approached things a little bit differently, because a lot of the things I did in my career were definitely against the grain. And at the time, I knew that they were the right thing. I don't know if you know this, but one of the things I helped bring into sports was wearable technology 13 years ago in college football. Nobody had ever tracked an athlete in games. And so what I basically was trying to do was just quantify the game of football, what was actually happening on the field, so that we could reverse engineer and then create a practice structure and training methodologies to improve performance. In my mind, I'm like, A plus, this is logical. The head coach consented and was like, yeah, let's do it. And to his credit, but there were people in that organization that were freaked out. One guy said, you're going to get everybody fired, because what if we find out that we're making mistakes? I'm like, that's exactly what we want to figure out.
Right.
But it was driving so much fear. And man, it made for a long, long. But at the end of that, our team had an 88% reduction in injury. We won a championship. The NFL flies in and is like, what the heck? And now we have a multi-billion dollar market, where every game now is tracked using this technology. But there's been multiple points in my career where I've kind of done things that were against the current. I really wish that I would have understood better how to craft these messages, because you get so caught up in, this is what needs to get done. And there was probably some immaturity and packaged, with that exuberance. And so I think that this is really helpful to understand. I'm curious, have you been able to use this in marketing for products?
Oh yeah. Wait, Eric, can we stick with your example? By the way, you were so ahead of the game 13 years ago. So let's try to go back to around 1990-ish or 2000 when you're kind of playing with this technology. So we're not talking about heart rate variability on a daily basis in the year 2000, especially for professional teams.
This is 2011.
Okay.
And no, nobody was talking about heart rate variability. Apple Watch hadn't yet come out. We were measuring it, but yes, you're exactly right. It was not on anybody's radar.
So there's a couple really important things here. It's good to get concrete examples for this. Yeah. So one, to be effective when you lack power, lack status, and you're lower in the hierarchy, and you don't necessarily have the numbers. You don't have the sheer number of people on your side yet. One thing you want to do is point out how much skin you have in the game. So you might have done this, but one way of doing this, listen, we'll do this at cost. I believe in this product. I will actually be sacrificing my hours, my salary, taking zero income, because I know that we could actually uncover new data that will help you understand the idiosyncratic preferences and needs of the players on your team and how it's changing in response to particular situations on the athletic field that you can't see because you don't have enough eyes. And so skin in the game is one of the important things, but it has to be behavioral. You can't just say you have skin in the game. Again, you want to list out what exactly you are sacrificing with this request of yours. The second thing that comes to mind when you give the example of your great technology is that you want to point out that there's short-term costs before they point it out. And so this is the thing we all wish we knew that when we were, you're basically the innovator archetype in terms of creating this new technology for this entire discipline. So you want to say up front, there is a trade-off for everything. Every vitamin, every drug that you take, even going to therapy, just talking to a psychologist like me, there is a trade-off, time, effort, energy, having to modify your behavior, get rid of old habits. All of that is cumbersome. You list those out ahead of time and you steal the thunder from your detractors such that there's nothing left in the list for them to address. And then, so you even list the short-term costs before you even mention the long-term benefits. And it steals the defensiveness of the audience and makes them more curious. Who the hell is this guy, Eric? He's coming and talking about all the problems that are going to arise if we listen to him. He's on number 7, and he hasn't even gotten to what the benefit I'm going to have. You have now won the novelty trigger of a new idea being exposed to an audience, and you get their attention.
This is brilliant. I'm thinking of so many applications right now. If you're thinking about trying to get a message out on social media, what if somebody actually started off by, if you do X, which is the thing that you should be doing, here's what's going to happen. And it's going to be negative, negative, negative. And be like, what the heck? Why would I do that? But you see what I'm saying? That's a really unique way of delivering a message that could help somebody.
Yeah. So to get even more molecular about this, so I appreciate your excitement about the science here. The more expertise that you have, so if you have your, those extra letters after your name, the MBA, the master's degree, the PhD, best-selling author, whatever it is behind you, ex-professional athlete, insert the name of the league, NBA, NFL, CFL, all of those things, when you have some of that gravitas behind you, now you are more alluring when you have a two-way message, which is that you share the costs and then you reveal the benefits. When you're earlier in your career and you lack all of that backing, you don't have the gravitas to your biography. Now it's actually more dangerous to actually do a two-way message because they're thinking ahead of time. Well, they're new to this. They don't know sports that well. They're outside of their lane. And so when I hear this cost, I hear this is someone that doesn't know what they're talking about. So be very clear is that the value of having a very clear short-term cost, long-term benefits approach really comes in when you have some expertise that you can show behaviorally that exists.
I'm just thinking right now of different times that I'll never forget when I first moved. I don't want to give too much of the story because I don't want to reveal parts of this, but I moved into a different league. Let's just say that. And I went from good to elite. And this guy comes up to me, this coach, and it's right before the season starts. And he's like, although I had already proven myself over here multiple times, he's like, listen, Eric, like, I'll never forget. He just walks up, like, listen, Eric, this is the blankety blank league. Like, don't say anything. Just sit back and watch. And I'm sitting there like, how arrogant are you? Like, you would never cut it in business because that is the death of your company immediately. And so one thing I learned in sports is like, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but like there are some industries that are incredibly hard to be innovative in because although there's extreme volatility in sports. So you see it every year. I'm going to get fired. Everybody's going to get fired. Everybody's going to get fired. And it happens like crazy, but you get paid a lot of money to get fired and to walk away. And so what do they constantly do? They resort back to what worked when they were at X. So all these ex-NFL Patriot coaches were like, oh, it worked when I was, this is how we do it. Cause you know, this is what we did at the New England Patriots, you know? And it's like, well, you also had Tom Brady, you numbskull. Like that really helps the situation. Look at all of the factors that came together. Yes, Bill Belichick is arguably one of the greatest coaches ever, but he also had the greatest quarterback in the middle of this system. And so when you're in those types of environments, you have a budget, you have operational resources. It's not like you're in a business where it's like, if you're the CEO, you're like, or you're starting from 0 to 1, like we are in a desert and we've got to make an oasis. How do we do that? You know what I'm saying? So it's okay. Like people are looking, I think, are more open to these insubordinations if they're a team player. I don't know. I have a lot of scar tissue from that world. And it was so frustrating for me because it was easy to get comfortable and just say like, this is what we did 10 years ago when we won. Why would I listen to you?
This is really helpful that you are deconstructing your positive and negative experiences. Because I think I always tell my college students that the best way to become great in an area is talk to someone that's two steps ahead of you where you want to be. Yeah. And because they'll have these, exactly, they'll have the scars and the bruises to tell you, hey, if I was in your situation back then, way back when, this is how I do things differently. I think we forget about the importance of social and political capital. Yeah. And I think social media doesn't help because we have this illusion that we have more backing and a stronger set of allies. We think the numbers means that people are there that are going to support us. The numbers just mean there are people watching. I mean, think of it more of as background characters than this is your united front in terms of the infantry to help you do battle. But this brings up like another strategy that you brought up with Bill Belichick, which is if you are just getting started, or you're a newcomer for an organization, the best way for your idea to get some merit is let it be amplified by someone that's more socially attractive than you. And I'm using that word strategically. Socially attractive, it could be physical, it could be they're kind, it could be they're wise, they're intelligent. It could be they're the person that everybody wants to sit next to at lunch because they're just fun to be around. Doesn't matter which variables go together. There's a matrix such that when this person speaks, people tend to put down their phones and listen. You want to get one of them as a co-creator or collaborator or supporter and let them get some credit for finding you. It is worth it for you to give some of the credit away so that your ideas get amplified than for you to think I want 100% of everything and 100% of credit and no one ends up hearing about it.
Yeah, I was in a role once as an operations director. That's a whole other story. But I learned something I would tell people. It's not the message, it's the messenger. And so I would find the person in the organization that could, I'd be like, listen, the coach needs to hear this, but it can't come from me. But he'll listen to you about this. Are we on a united front? Yeah, absolutely. We both think, okay, can you find the right time? And then let's inception this thing, right? Like, so like it's like all of a sudden, like they're like, yeah, it was my idea. I don't care. Like, I really don't care. It's for the health of the organization. I had a friend that just took a very senior role as a director of sports science at one of the top 5 football programs in college. And he calls me up. It's somebody I'd mentored. And he was like, what do I do? I said, 1, don't say anything. You shut your mouth and you listen to what that head coach cares about. And the first dashboard you make for the data is only the things that he is interested in. That's it.
Such good advice.
Give him what he wants. And then after you've earned his trust for X period of time, if you think there's one thing, then slowly, like if you go in with all these new ideas, you will be fired. You will 100% get fired. I wish I would have learned this. I probably would Anyway.
Same here. No, same here. No. And I could tell you're successful just by the way that you're responding of that example of like, you're like, listen, the coach will listen to you, not me. I mean, you could think about this in terms of meeting people and social gatherings. You want to be a low maintenance social interaction. So what does a high maintenance social interaction mean? It means that it takes more energy to interact with someone than should be required for the situation. That's it. So it could be someone that's babblicious, one of my favorite terms. If someone just, you cannot interrupt their stories once they get started. It's just, there's no yes and. Like, there's, you're not interacting together. You're basically two Shakespeare soliloquies meeting in the night. And that's a high maintenance interaction because you're like thinking, can I jump in now? Can I jump in now? And then you have people that are reserved and quiet. And you know that they're interesting. Like, you meet people that are Nobel Prize winners. You meet people that are have published books. You have people that, you know, professional athletes, you know, they have amazing stories, but some people don't know how to describe their life in an interesting way. So that's a high maintenance interaction because you have to bring some mental construction devices to excavate these kind of cool stories that you know are there. And at some point you're like, screw it. This isn't worthwhile. Like, I'll just talk to the mailman. Like, it'll be just be easier and playful, and I can conserve some energy for my workout this day. Be low maintenance.
I wish I would have met you a long time ago, Todd. I think we would have been very good friends, and I would have saved myself a lot of pain. So people need to read this book. Thanks again for listening to the Blueprint Podcast. And if you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to stay tuned because we got another episode coming with Dr. Kashtan on the science of grit and how to stay resilient through setbacks. Until next time, stay curious and keep chasing excellence.